Welcome to another episode of the Bogeyman Golf Podcast with AIG, dedicated supporters of amateur golf in Ireland. This series will showcase some of the incredible amateur golf across Ireland this year. Go visit AIG.ie for a range of golf-exclusive discounts and benefits on their products. Golf Ireland members can save an additional 10% on their car insurance, and you can enjoy some exclusive benefits when you choose AIG insurance. In this episode, I'm joined by the 2024 West of Ireland champion, Keith Egan. Keith spoke very honestly about how he approached this championship, how he stayed within his process, and how demanding these championships are, physically as well as mentally, particularly in his case, being diabetic, and what it means to him personally to etch his name into Irish golfing history.
For me, the biggest thing is just being able to say, like, I'm the fucking champ. For most of my life, I've wanted to win these things because of him and make him proud and happy. My fundamental level of discipline comes from is from being a diabetic and understanding the value of being disciplined. And I think that feeds over into other aspects of my life. It cements me in Irish amateur history. No one or nothing can take that away from me.
Keith Egan, thank you very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
West of Ireland champion, has that settled in now?
Yeah, I think so. After, what is it, a week now? It's a week today, so after a lot of celebrating and I suppose reflecting on the whole thing, it's definitely settled in now.
You're saying it's a proper trophy, like, and it is, it's a beast here, like it's a big old trophy.
Yeah, it's cool. I think when I say proper trophy, the reason I mean that is because, like, it's big, it's very, like, it sticks out, and there's a lot of kind of like experienced dints in it. The names, like you can tell it's an old trophy. Yeah. I think that's what's cool about it. Like it kind of has
JB Carr,
a thousand stories. Yeah. JB Carr, like won it 9 times. Cecil Ewan, like Rory McIlroy, obviously a couple of times. Shane Lowry. It's just you go through the names and then you see the even each name that's engraved is even a little bit different. So just spending time looking at the trophy, you can see that there's a lot of history in just the trophy alone rather than just the tournament, which is very cool.
Did you spend much time just looking at it and just kind of getting up and getting familiar with it?
On Wednesday, I was the day after when I got back to Dublin, I actually just spent the whole day. I went up to Carton House and spent a lot of time in the pro shop with the head pro, Harry, there. And we were just looking at it. And looking at the names and then noticing all the little details about the trophy. Like, I suppose when I got the trophy, I didn't realize that it's got the Connacht logo on it. I didn't realize a lot of things like that. And then when you spend some time looking at it, looking at the names, looking at the little dints in it that they kind of, you're always wondering about the history of it, like who did that or what type of party caused that. But I suppose looking at it is just very cool to kind of understand the significance of it.
Yeah, you mentioned things like the Connacht Trophy and the small kind of, we'll call them imperfections, so, you know, dints and whatever. That's all, but like, why would you know that? You know, you've never won this before. You've never, like, this is your first championship title. How would you know the kind of the small intricacies of a title that
and
you
have? That's
the cool
thing. Yeah, you wouldn't, because like I suppose I'm sure a lot of competitors have some sort of a thing about touching a trophy before they play in a tournament or. If a trophy is out around the latter stages of a tournament, some people just have a thing about going close to a trophy, or sometimes they just don't have access to getting close to it. And it was the first time I've actually seen the trophy. I think maybe I've glanced at it in the cabinet in County Sligo Golf Club, but and that's the beauty about winning, is that you actually get to see those things rather than observing someone else's or actually getting to spend a bit of time with it. You get to see all the, I'd say, compliments of the trophy rather than imperfections, you know? So it's just cool.
I got to spend the day with you the week before the West of Ireland at the Leitrim Bettystown Scratch Cup. We filmed the video that'll be coming out next week. You said you watched it back and you learned a little bit about yourself and everything from that. But before we actually talk about what you learned from that, the week before the West of Ireland Championship, it's obviously the very first kind of tournament of the season. It's a learning week for you. Did you feel like you had a championship win in you that early in the season going into Leitrim? And like, did you feel the game was in a good way at that point?
Yeah, actually after Leitrim, that gave me a very clear picture of where my game was at. So that actually helped my preparation going into the West. I felt like the things that I gathered from Leytown was that some things that I would generally struggle with, like off the tee, and especially around somewhere like Leytown, it's quite tricky. I actually drove it quite well. My overall game was there. I just made some maybe mental errors and I wasn't quite sharp. So I made some errors with my pitching, and then my putting was poor, but I don't think my putting was poor in terms of from a technical standpoint or even a green reading standpoint. It was more so just mentally being maybe a little bit too tense and a little bit too like result driven. Sure. Instead of actually just focusing on my process and what I could control. And then that's what made me realize what I had to do to go into the West and perform well. So I really worked on that for a few days leading up to the West. And then actually seeing the video, I watched it, the full thing that you sent me last night. And then looking at my demeanor, which was the thing that I wanted to really gain from this, is that it's very hard to, I like to try visualize myself as a third person in terms of when I'm on the golf course, my demeanor and my emotion. But it's very, very hard to do that unless you develop some sort of awareness, and that comes from experience. But looking at my demeanor and looking at my how I played and how I handled the whole day, I was just maybe a little bit forceful and a little bit too tense in everything that I was doing. And I think that was a lot of anxiety, but a lot of excitement towards playing a tournament, first tournament of the year. So a lot of those types of just, I wouldn't say rustiness, but just kind of lack of competition that really showed throughout the video.
So on the day of the Scratch Cup, you kind of spoke to me and spoke on camera about how your intention was to just like stay consistent and stay in your process.
Mm.
Is that something that you've been working on throughout the winter, or is that a learning you took from last season? Because, I mean, like, hot start.
Yeah, it's something that I learned from last year, because I played quite poor last year and I performed poorly mentally on the course and just how I handled like the balance of everything about my golf. And so it's definitely something that I worked at throughout the winter, trying to create a lot more awareness about what I'm doing and be a lot more particular about how I treat competition and how I treat my, or what is my best way of performing. And when I say that, it's more so about like being competitive and being getting my internal self, like my mental process, in a very a good place where I felt like I could perform at a high level. Whereas sometimes I can get a little bit over analytical and focus too much on results, and then that can just create a little bit of an imbalance of what I'm doing.
So is your intention just to stay, I guess, stay present, but stay within yourself rather than result orientated or performance orientated?
Yeah, instead of thinking about teams, instead of thinking about winning, focusing more on like my ability to perform well, and then having a balance with everything that I do. So understanding, like, so at least now I understand that what I do and my process can make me perform very well. Mm. And I have proof that my process really works.
Okay.
So now I can actually really focus on that, and then I understand what I have to do to perform at a relatively high level. So I understand that moving forward now, that's just something that I really, really need to focus on.
Before a season begins, do you set goals? And it doesn't seem like there might not be performance based, but much more so stay in your process. But if you do have those goals shifted now, because you've got to a point where, you know, you play the first championship, the things you've been working on obviously bear fruit.
Mm.
Do the goalposts shift at all?
I'm a big believer in goals. I think setting short, medium, long-term goals, I believe in kind of setting them fairly lofty as well. So no matter how crazy that they are, I think setting goals, because I think if you set very, very lofty goals and you fail, you still might achieve something that like extremely is something that you should be proud of. And I always give this example or make this point to people in the fitness industry as well. Like, just if you set something, like if I set a target to run 12 marathons next year and I run 10, like I fail, I don't achieve my goal, but I still did something unbelievable. So I think that's it. That's why it's very important to set lofty goals. But in terms of shifting the goalposts, no, because again, they're quite lofty. So, yeah. And then understanding that how important my internal process is, focusing on my own performance. Like, for example, like if I played Munster stroke play, I could shoot 20 under for four rounds and lose by eight shots.
Sure.
And, but that doesn't really, just because I didn't win doesn't mean that I didn't perform extremely well. So being more focused on that type of things. But yeah, I still have the same goals and I'm still going to give the same commitment that I had before this. This is just proof that what I've been doing is working.
It's funny you mentioned setting lofty goals, and even if you fail, you still fail well.
Mm.
Samuel L. Jackson, an actor, a few years ago did an interview actually talking about golf.
Mm.
He's a big golfer. He plays in like the Pebble Beach Pro-Am and a few of those. And he talks about how golf is just failing well, because how often do you hit a perfect golf shot?
Yeah. Like, he said like it's managing your mistakes.
Exactly.
And it's making your mistakes better.
And so that kind of, you were talking about obviously failing well. Golf is exactly that sport, because like no one plays the perfect round of golf. I don't think anyone can say they did play the perfect round of golf.
No, there's always criticism for your round of golf. Yeah,
even like, you know, Bryson shooting that 58, he was like, you know, left like two or three out.
Yeah,
and you're
yeah,
like, well, you mean, he still shot 58, which is a record.
You're like, get over it.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah. So it's funny that, I guess, that golf is a funny one where you can still win, you can still achieve without playing what people would call like the perfect round of golf. Mm. You must be playing good golf though, like,
yeah,
to win and to win the way you did in the West. Like, I don't think when I got to the match play you saw the 18th hole.
Yeah, and I didn't. And I suppose that's when it's easy for me to talk about my internal process once like my body's performing the right way and my swing is in the right place. And like, I'm lucky that I've done some good work with my coach Gav Lunny over the winter, and felt like I'm in a good place with my swing. So then I can literally just focus on my internal process. What is my internal process? It's kind of how we were saying, you don't hit perfect golf shots or you don't play perfect rounds of golf. So it's kind of how you react to certain situations, how you problem solve throughout a round, and then just how you deal with everything. That's what I noticed also looking at the video that you did for Laytown, that there were certain moments in those two rounds that I just didn't react quite well, and then followed up, let's say, one shot by another mistake, and then that just caused me to not get momentum throughout the whole day. Like, I think if I played very well that day, I still don't think I was getting to whatever Raf was. But
yeah, well, in terms of that place,
yeah, he's an animal around there. Well, he's an animal everywhere, especially around there. But yeah, so that's kind of that's where I felt like I was at, especially in the West. I just got very comfortable where my, as the week went on, I started getting a little bit more confidence, and then just getting a very nice balance between my, where my technique was, where my swing was, and where my mental state was. Now, what complements what? I think it's definitely a balance of both. Like, both need to be very good, but I just got the right balance on the week.
Yeah, it's fine when you, like, I think you're dead right. And I think any amateur golfer can attest to it. If your swing technically is in a good place, confidence-wise, you're in a much better place. And then with that, mentally, you're in a much stronger place as well. And everything kind of just, whereas if you're in a poor mental place, don't have the confidence, you know, cracks begin to show in the swing. So everything, it's like a little triangle that everything complements one another.
100%. And I'm a great believer of, the more free that I am with how I play, the better my feel is. So when I'm free in my thought process, and I'm free physically, and I'm very I'm embracing every result that can happen.
Yeah.
I'm not too tense about what I'm doing. Then that actually increases my ability to figure out things and problem solve as I'm playing. So that might be, if I'm struggling with my putting, I can just figure it out relatively fast. If I'm struggling with a particular pitch shot, or if I get a lie or a particular shot that I'm uncomfortable with, if I have a lot of freedom, then I can figure it out a lot easier rather than getting tense. My muscles get tense, and then my brain just doesn't quite react as well. So that's where, when I'm saying a sense of freedom and getting a balance between the two, it's like having the ability to make technically good swings, but then mentally being capable of making good adjustments throughout the round. And I think that's, especially around links courses, you always have to make adjustments because you have to hit a lot of different shots when it's windy. So that's definitely what I found last week. I was able to make adjustments throughout the week.
You kind of answered it, but I got to ask, the second round, the one under par bogey free, you must have been playing with a certain amount of freedom, but like, you've spoken a few times now, I've listened to a few other interviews you've done, where you readjusted for the last five holes, we'll say from 14 onwards. You kind of look at that as like, right, we'll treat that as its own kind of mini course. So that looks like 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Can you talk me through that round? Because like, obviously everyone going into a championship and everyone in the field for a championship backs themselves and feels that they have the game to win a championship. After that round, did you go, right, I'm definitely in a space here where I'm, are you aware of the fact that things are starting to align or things are in the right place for you physically and mentally?
100%. Well, so that round was just a point where I gained a lot of confidence, because I lost a lot of confidence after the first round from getting to 3 under after 13, or it might have been 3 under, and I missed quite a short putt on 12 from what I remember. In the first round, so I was cruising along at 3 under, and then I got to 15 tee, and it was almost like I had the sense of, okay, just get it in at this score, rather than treating that stretch of holes with a separate type of respect.
Sure.
Because everyone knows the plays. Ross is in the wind that we played it at, from 14 in, the wind was in off the left. So for that type of wind, it makes the first five holes relatively easy. And I'll say relative because it depends on the person. So some people, the holes don't suit them. But I felt like I could get a score in the first five and then kind of hang on from it. It made the second six holes easier because of that wind. But I was trying to hang on from 6 until 11, try to make the most of 12 and 13, and then try treat 13 to or 14 to 18 like it was a totally new course. So in the first round I was 3 under after 14, and then I finished 1 over, and I actually got a good up and down on the last to finish 1 over. So I was, after that round, and I didn't put well at all. It was very similar to how I put it in Laytown. I was maybe too result driven, and too result driven as in like trying to really, really hold putts rather than visualizing putts and reading putts and then just trusting myself. There wasn't a lot of trust. It was more so like a forceful type of action that I had. Even though it probably looks like zero difference in my technique, after I finished the round, I was disgusted with just how I handled the whole situation. Like the last stretch of holes, because I went from being pretty much flawless in the first 13 holes to being like awful in the last five or six holes. So after I finished the round, I went out and I did some practice, and I found that I was hitting it lovely, I was pitching lovely, and then I just found something on the putting green. And this is kind of where I was saying about tapping into like a little bit of freedom, that I was able to just figure something out like straight away.
Sure. And it was technical rather than mental for those?
Yeah, technical as in like standing half an inch further away from the ball. You know, like how technical is that? But how technical is that? And that kind of, I think it's more of a freedom thing. And I suppose it's kind of, you can take from that whatever you want. But I found just from doing that, I was able to just relax my hands and let my body react to each putt. And then I went out in the second round, and before the second round, my warm up, I was just starting to hold a lot of putts, and I was starting to get a visualization for the ball going in the hole. I was hitting it nice, and then in that round I hit it lovely, but I was just very clinical with everything. So like the wind got so strong where putting got quite difficult, and I'm a very good wind putter because I'm very much, I like to visualize putts, and even when there's wind, I'm able to hold a lot of putts. So once I got my eye in, I think I hit a few very good putts in the first few holes that didn't go in, but they were very good kind of 15 to 20 foot putts that just lipped out. And then I kind of had it in my head. I was like, right, let's split this course up into different types of courses, different small courses. And then once I got to 14 tee, I was like, okay, forget about everything that's happening. Forget about the difficulty of the day. Just for myself, I need to shoot. I need to play each shot as it comes, because I understand how one shot can make a significant difference on that stretch of holes.
Yeah.
So I treated it like really trying to get as dialed into each shot as it comes. And I did that perfectly. I played them quite flawlessly. Like I maybe hit a bad shot in 16 tee and then chipped it to 10 feet and hold the putt. And I was just like, once I hold that putt, I understood getting to 17, almost played as this, like a scoreable par five, and I made a great four there, but I hit two really like a great drive two iron to that hole. But then once I finished that round, I was like, okay, now I understand that I can actually play and stay within like a very very present routine. Instead of getting too caught up in what's going on, I was like, literally each shot as it comes.
Sure.
Literally, like, just focus on each shot, because that golf course, you can take any hole on that course, and especially when there's wind, you can get out of position, you can kind of rack up a number quite easily. So from showing respect to that course, it made me stay a little bit more disciplined. And since I was disciplined, that gave me like a lot of confidence, because I looked at the scores after the second round, and then I was like, geez, I didn't actually realize how hard that was. It was only my caddy Dara Gren was saying it to me after, and then I was like, geez, I actually totally I was so stuck in what I was doing that I didn't really think of how difficult it was. And then I realized once I looked at the scores, I was like, right, like, I know if the weather's like that and I play the way I did, I'm going to be very difficult to beat. So it just gave me confidence that I could go into each match and just do my thing, and I would be difficult to beat.
That your best performance of the week?
I think so. I think just in terms of a mental standpoint, yeah, because it was more of a reaction to round one. I think so. Yeah, going bogey free around there is pretty good, I think.
A little bit of an understatement. Because the West is always like, it's synonymous with being just biblical conditions. Like,
yeah,
there wasn't the rain, but there was a serious amount of wind.
Yeah.
How attritional is that golf course? Like, how much of it is just a case of like surviving and holding on?
A lot of it. Like, I think a lot of it is avoiding mistakes, because it's a very difficult course to make birdies on. And I think you could just look at the scores in the field for the week, that not a lot of people were making birdies, because there's maybe like if the fifth is downwind, you kind of play that as a par four.
Sure.
But like even the third now is still a difficult par five, especially the approach shot. So I was thinking like if I can play consistently, and I'm generally a person that doesn't make a lot of mistakes, that I understood that's what gets a job done around there. Because once people have to chase around, for example, in match play, if you have to chase someone, you're going to start making mistakes fairly, fairly quickly. But I think this year the course was set up a little bit differently. There wasn't as much rough, and obviously we got good weather. So, and I think maybe that was earlier on in the year. I think that suited very well, because just like people haven't been as competitive, haven't played as many competitions. So it just suited the course, the way the course was set up really suited the field a lot more, I think.
How do you switch that mentality then to go from stroke play to match play? Or does your mentality switch at all? You spoke about kind of like literally sticking to the shot and not thinking about anything else. And a lot of people say that, you know, they stick to their process and take it shot by shot. I think when it comes to stroke play, I think that's a lot easier to do than in match play. Mm. Does your mentality shift it, or did it?
I think there's definitely a natural amount that it'll shift, but I try stay in that bubble as much as I can, because I found a great balance of being very aware of everything, but being disciplined to stay within my mindset. And I think in stroke play, you're always kind of aware of like what your score is, but being able to, having the ability to stay very disciplined and stick to a process is the very difficult thing about it. You know, like for example, if you birdie the first four holes, it's very hard to stand up on the 15 and like be super free, or like not think about your score. Like that's the beauty about golf, is that there's always variables in terms of like what our score is can really dictate how we think. So what I need to do from now on is just really focusing on what made me very good, and that's like literally trying to be disciplined with my thought process. And I'm not saying that's what made me great, but it gave me, again, it's all about balance, and it gave me the best ability to perform at a competitive level. Because like we saw in Laytown, like I was more than good enough to shoot a couple, maybe 3-4 unders on that day without having my absolute best golf. But how I kind of handled a few situations, or just my lack of ability on the day to free up, stop me from having a couple of good scores. So from now on, especially going into stroke play, that I need to just be disciplined with my thought process and focus on literally each shot as they come, rather than thinking of an overall outcome.
I spoke to a few of your contemporaries after the tournament, who they all said that particularly once they got to the match play, I think hindsight's a great thing, when they all said it as well after shooting the second round that you did. Mm. They all said that you came across as a man on a mission.
Mm.
And there was something a little bit different about you that week. Was there anyone conversely from your side that you were like, I don't want to come up against? Because the guys that I was talking to, a few of them didn't play against you, and they're like, I'm glad I didn't play against them, because it would have been, you won 5-3 and 2-1 in your first two match three rounds. A couple of them were saying you would have won like 6-4 or something.
Yeah. I don't think there's anyone I consciously didn't want to come up against. I think like I embrace competitive matches, I embrace competition, and I perform better under like good competition. I think that's why I had a few really tough matches. I think that's why I played well. I played really well in some of the match play matches, because I understood the threat that I was under, especially at the start. I think you need to be kind of aware that you could face anyone. Like, you could face a Hugh Foley, you could face a Matt McLean, you could face a Peter O'Keefe. In my case, I had to face like a Paul O'Hanlon, who's a really good player and a friend of mine. So every match play match creates its own difficulty. You can always come up against a guy that you don't really know, but is in super hot form, and that can always catch you by surprise. So you need to be prepared for like prime Tiger in every single match,
sure.
No matter what the name is, no matter what their history is. I think that's the great thing about match play, is that you'll see some guys that mightn't have the experience of other guys and beating them, and you just think that the guy with the big name doesn't play as well, but it's not necessarily the case. It's just engulfed. Sometimes a guy's better than you on the day, and you need to be able to understand that everyone's capable of that. And this sport, the unique thing about this sport is that it's not tennis, where generally tennis, the best player wins, like the top ranked guy wins all the time, but that's not the case in golf. So I needed to be able to understand, especially this week, that I could lose against anyone. I was well prepared for that thought process.
Yeah. How tough is it playing against a friend of yours? You said Paul O'Hanlon, he's a member in Carton, you guys play together a lot. How different and how much tougher is it to play against someone that, I mean, obviously you've been in the circuit for a while, everyone knows everyone at this point, really.
Yeah.
But it is different when you're playing against a clubmate, someone you've played with, probably been on teams with growing up.
Mm.
You know his game inside out, and he knows yours.
Mm. Even more difficult for, like, playing against Paul. Like, let's say against someone like Evan Farrell. I know Evan Farrell very, very well. I stayed with him, roomed with him in Interpros, and I get on great with him. But we know each other from golf, so we have an ability to separate, and that's fine. Same with, like, David Brady, like, you have an ability to separate your relationship. But with Paul's originally from the Curragh Golf Club, and so am I. That's where I started playing golf. Like, I remember being on the driving range in the Curragh in 2006 when he lost in the final to Rory McIlroy in the West. So I remember being on the range waiting to find out how he got on. So, like, that's a little bit more of a personal thing, and it's kind of full circle that, and I understood that at the time, that it's full circle for that to come around and then play against Paul. It is difficult because there's a certain amount of like, geez, I can't lose this match, as well as like most of the time you're like, I have to beat this guy. So there's a certain amount of that comes with an emotional attachment. Like, I would have had the same with Dara Flynn if Dara had beaten Rian Carvel, and I understood, I was prepared for that because I saw that they went to extra holes. But yeah, that was very difficult. But again, that's when my discipline and my ability to kind of separate the two really stuck with me, because and then also, like, I suppose the best form of shown respect is to try beat the crap out of someone. You know, if me and you are playing golf or playing darts and it's a life or death situation, we're not going to talk to each other, you know. So like that, I think that's the case. So I was just brought that mentality. It's like, no, I have to win this, because Paul's more than capable of beating me and then winning the tournament. So I had to understand that and understand every outcome. I wasn't able to go out and just be casual about what we were doing. Yeah. So like, it was weird that we didn't really talk. We didn't, but that I think that showed that we both had respect for each other, and we understood that we could both lose and win. So it was difficult, but good, fun. Like, I think it was a great learning experience for both of us.
that was going to be one of the nicest compliments anyone's ever given me, that you see me as a threat. But then you very quickly were like, nah, not darts. He's definitely not like good enough things, golfer. Like.
But different things. Like, we could be playing anything, like any type of competitive thing where there's something significant on the line.
Yeah.
You dive into a very, very deep competitive level of mindset straight away. So, yeah. Try to deflect from that.
Yeah, sure. You spoke about discipline and kind of just staying disciplined for a lot of this conversation. And I noticed that as well when we were together in Laytown. Like, you had your lunch in your car and you sat there. And is that more to kind of stay in your process from the discipline side? Or is it a case of just you kind of happy being in your own company and this is a, you know, you're here to win. You're not here to crack and enjoy yourself. I mean, the enjoying yourself, I'm sure, came
once you won. Definitely, like for the likes of Laytown, I was just staying in my car. Gave me like to be by myself. I'm like a little bit of an ambivert. Like I'm definitely introverted in some ways and extroverted in other ways. But I enjoyed to try analyze my morning round and then get myself in a headspace where I can improve in the afternoon round. And then as well as the other part of it is just that I'm disciplined with my food. So I had my own food prepared. I didn't go into the clubhouse because I had my own food prepared. So I was just willing to just sit in my car by myself and eat that. And then, but really get in it was more so about getting into a headspace where I felt like I could perform better in the afternoon. Cause I wasn't really happy in the morning round of where I was at. So it was definitely very important for me to try analyze and then improve for the afternoon.
Do you do that then after each round for the West as well? Do you kind of just take a bit of time to be on your own?
Yeah, so I had a great process in the West where, like, my caddy Dara, like, as soon as we finished the round, he kind of went, did his own thing. I did my own thing. I went in, got food, sat by myself, and then I would go to my car, maybe like just relax, listen to a bit of music, and then go out about my process of hitting some chips, hitting some pitches, and then hitting some putts, and hopefully hit some balls if I had enough time. But yeah, it was mainly just being disciplined with everything that I did. So like, if I felt like I was in a good mindset, again, the time of year that it's at, you're still working on things. So I actually went out and genuinely got some good practice in between rounds as well. But then at the same time, not over practicing, trying to relax, but then not get too far out of my own process. Because I've realized in the past that I've done that, and it's very hard to, once you get out of your process in terms of like relaxing, it's very hard to just kick back into gear. And so I understood that. And that's where, like, I suppose experience comes into play, that I understood where I needed to be to perform well.
Because you've been in like knockout stages of championships before. I think the South, you've been to about semifinals, and a couple of them you've been to semifinals.
Yeah, I've been to a couple of semifinals at the South, and then I was in a final in the South in 2019, and then I think I was in the quarters. I was in a few quarterfinals as well. But yeah, I think with each match and how you handle each match, especially when you lose, you're able to look back on and learn more from it. I know that it sounds very cliche, but you do. Like I'll probably learn more from some of the losses I've had in the past than I did from last week. There's a couple particular things that I'll learn from the West. But yeah, it's a lot of the time it's how I've handled myself being up in matches, starting to relax, and then all of a sudden I would lose a match from nowhere, or I would just get out of my process, get a little bit complacent, or not even complacent, just lose my intensity, and then all of a sudden I'm in a position where I'm just not very focused and I can't get back into gear.
Sure.
And I think mainly amateurs, you see a lot of great amateurs that are capable of doing that, keeping an intensity for a whole match. And then that's why they just win a lot of matches, or they're very, very hard to beat.
These championships, so I guess, like, if we're going to talk about it chronologically, we're not quite yet at the semifinals of the West. But to that point, these amateur championships are very, like, demanding physically as well as mentally. You're diabetic as well. And you talk about how disciplined you are when it comes to your food. I mean, literally, your life depends on it.
Yeah.
How much more of an extra balance or another thing to take into account is the fact that you're diabetic and competing at an elite level with diabetes, because that's in itself no mean feat.
Yeah. I suppose, like, so let's say for me on a day-to-day basis, that is my priority number one, is my diabetes, because I understand like how fickle that can be if I'm not very disciplined with it. So that's where my, I suppose, my fundamental level of discipline comes from, is from being a diabetic and understanding the value of being disciplined. And I think that feeds over into other aspects of my life. But yeah, it was mainly just preparation is the big thing. Like I've spoken about this before, but I prepare all my meals for a whole week. And I change when I go to a tournament, because I would generally do it the night before I leave for a tournament, rather than I'm usually every Sunday evening, I watch football and I make my food. And then, so then like for the West, I was on the Tuesday night, I did all my meal prep and then went to the West, and I understood that I made enough food for the whole week, like even if I got to the final. Yeah. And that wasn't like a cocky thing about getting to the final. It's just because like if I come back, if I lose or if I don't make the cut or whatever, I still have my food for when I come back, because I'm going straight back to work anyway.
You still need to eat.
So it's just another week for me, but preparation was the biggest thing for that. So then when I go back to, let's say, after a long day of playing the last 16 in the quarterfinal, like I'm exhausted, you're checking into a new hotel or a new accommodation, that I knew I had my food there in a cooler bag, so I could just bring my food into the hotel room, eat my food, stay in my own bubble, and then just kind of relax instead of having to go out somewhere and get food and eat food that I'm not really used to. It was very easy for me to stay within my process. And then I think it helped me physically, because since I was eating the same food, I didn't have any crash or any carb crash or getting up and having a big fry in the morning. I didn't feel physically compensated at all. I felt physically as good as I ever do. And it was only after the tournaments where all the emotions kind of hit you. That's when you start to feel kind of fatigued.
I guess it's a case of kind of controlling what you can control. So the classic case of control the controllables.
Yeah.
You're saying that kind of discipline seeps into other aspects of your life. What other aspects does it seep into?
So like with my fitness, like I understand the value that my fitness has, my type 1 diabetes, like training every day and making training a non-negotiable. With work, like I work in the fitness industry, so in terms of I work with individual clients, with classes, with meetings. So I have to be very disciplined with that, because I'm organizing a lot of things. So they all fall over with one another. Like if my food isn't disciplined and my diabetes isn't very good, that's going to affect how I work. Then that's also going to affect how my golf is. That's going to affect how I train. So for me to have a good balance, all of these things need to be in sync with each other. Mm. And that all fundamentally comes down to discipline for me. So I know a lot of people probably function better without discipline, because it gets their mind in a great spot. Like it allows them to play with more, to be free in their life. But for me individually, that's where discipline with one thing falls over into other aspects of my life, because they all require discipline.
How do you sleep on a week like the West? How do you sleep this week? Like you mentioned there, as you got to the latter stages, did you have to change accommodation?
Yeah, a couple of times, because we had a house, and I'm sure a lot of people are, I think a lot of people are like this, because you don't want to book a full week, because let's say if I don't make it to the latter stages, I want to go home, because then I can go back to work, and then, you know, that's a lot more functional. I'm not losing money, I'm actually making money, so it makes a lot more sense.
For sure.
A lot of people that are playing have families, so they want to go back and see their families, or most of the time it's just lads want to get the hell out of there. They don't want to be around if they're not competing. So sure. So usually we'll book until maybe the first round of the match play, check out that morning, and then hopefully if you keep going, you can book somewhere each night. Because like since the West is at Easter, it's Easter, after Easter Sunday, then all the accommodation seems to free up. So then you can book into different places easier. So I slept great all week, apart from maybe the night before the semi-final. I understood where I was at, and I understood how well I was playing, and I understood my opportunity, and I understand that it's not easy coming to these stages of not only a West of Ireland, but all of the championships, all of the match play championships. So I understood what was at stake, and so I didn't sleep great. I slept okay, but I didn't sleep amazing.
What do you do to try and get yourself to sleep? Just because you're the one thing I'm really getting from this is that you prioritize discipline above all else.
Yeah.
Is it the same thing when trying to get yourself to sleep, just trying to just get calm and then just
I find
give yourself over to to what you're about
and
to enter
I think because sometimes again understanding balance. So like for me being competitive, being intense in a competitive environment is great, but also like personally I understand that I'm a very like I'm relaxed, I'm chill, I'm a happy guy, so I need to be able to decompress as well. So usually if I don't sleep, I'll stick on a stupid YouTube video that has like, or listen to comedians or comedy show or something that's funny and I can totally disengage with.
Sure.
Sometimes it's a Tottenham it's like fans talking about Tottenham matches because I'm a big Tottenham fan, so
sometimes
that pisses me off, sometimes it doesn't
Lawrence
make me sleep.
Diehard Arsenal fan.
Oh Jesus,
he's going to stop recording now.
Come on, Harry Kane. But so sometimes it's just totally disengaging more than anything that helps me just relax and kind of take my mind off what I'm doing.
Could talk about the final day then. Like that's a day which is, it's a funny one. I'd say, but so obviously you went up in the semi-finals, went up like what, 2-0 or so early enough, went back to all square around the turn, and then you managed to see it out early again. You didn't go near the 18th hole.
Yeah.
A good match again, and another good performance. That weight that you have then, because obviously the other semi-final goes to what, 24, 25 holes?
I think I had 2 hours between when I finished and when I teed it up in the final.
So we were recording the podcast whilst that was going on, and I was tracking it online, and I was saying to Michael, my co-host, because he coaches our Irish hockey, so he's kind of used to that elite athlete environment. Mm. How tough is that 2 hour wait? It's different from like a team aspect, which is his background, to obviously an individual athlete. How tough is that, and what do you do to get your mind off of it, stay loose, stay warm, but still stay kind of not intense, which is what you like to stay in, but stay
disciplined,
focused.
Yeah. It was very weird. It was very weird because I remember, and the thing that's weird about it is that, like, let's say in my situation, a lot of people came up to watch the semi-final from Carton House, guys that in Hermitage, just friends of mine. So a lot of people came up to watch it. So like when you're sitting in at lunch, you can have a few like different groups of friends that are there to see you, and then all of a sudden they don't know each other. So it can be, you can easily fall into just trying to talk to everyone.
Yeah.
So that's a weird part, but I did that in 2019 when I've spoke about this before, about playing in the final of the South, where I had two nice a break in between semi-final and final, where when I got to the first tee in the final, I wasn't nervous, or I didn't have any doubt in what I was doing. Like I was very, very confident, to the point where I was not too confident, but I had a good start, and then all of a sudden I just fell out of my bubble and my focus. For this one was more weird because obviously I had 2 hours. So what I did was that I went up to the clubhouse. I was like, right, I'm going to go up, get a bite to eat, and then I'm just going to go off and do my own thing. So I went up to the clubhouse, just had a light lunch, spoke with a couple of friends, and then I just went to my car, listened to some music for about 35, 40 minutes, and then I just went out back to my practice session. So I had about an hour 15 practice. If I had it under, and the difficult thing was that it was sudden death, the playoff, and I think they went to 24, didn't they?
Yeah.
So I kept being told that we're teeing off at 1:15 in the afternoon, but then that I think got pushed back to about 2:15. So I kept being told it was 1:15, but then eventually it kept getting pushing back. So I didn't really have enough time to go hit balls, which I probably would have liked to.
Sure.
But what it is, so I just went out pitching for a while, chipping, getting shots that I thought I might have in the course, and then I went out in the putting green for a while. And one of the best things that actually happened was two of my friends, a guy Jack Dempsey and Connor McGrogan, came over to me on the putting green, and we just told stupid stories, like just talked absolute nonsense for about 20 minutes, and that helped me to just relax. And then I when I heard who had won, I just told them, I was like, right, lads, I'll see you later. I'm just going to go back to my process here.
Yeah.
And that actually gave me a great chance to kind of not exhaust myself mentally as well. So it's, again, it's finding a balance to disengage, but also stay focused as well. And what the mistake I've made in the past is like totally disengaging and then finding it hard to kick back into gear. But then when I got to the first tee, I made a few practice swings and I was like, oof, geez, I'm a bit stiff. And then I was thinking, right, nice smooth shot off the first tee. And then I just totally snap hooked it. Yeah, I hit an awful shot, like probably the worst shot I hit all week. But I knew that I wasn't in a place where it was going to rattle me. I was like, I was very much focused. I just kind of made it. I understood that I just made a bad swing. And then I was able to get out of there with a half and then kind of kick on from there. So I was very happy. And I understood that as I was playing in the final that, no, look, I had a very good balance there in what I did. So it gave me a lot of trust in what I was doing.
Yeah, because I guess the converse, sort of the flip side to you having a 2 hour break is that your opponent obviously didn't get nearly as much of a break. Mm. And like, there's almost a risk of you being too relaxed, which obviously you're saying you weren't, but then they're so fatigued, and for it to go obviously down to 16 was a seriously impressive feat, I guess.
It is, yeah. It that was very impressive from David's standpoint, especially because I think he had been to a few playoffs anyway during the week, so yeah. It showed how...
I think he played like two playoffs the day before as well.
Yeah, that's a huge credit to him, like how consistent he was, and I suppose the grit that he had throughout the week, that he was able to get into a position mentally to keep going and understand that he was going to be very hard to beat. And I understood that there's two aspects of that, where like if he has a quick turnaround, I understand that he can be sharp because he's still in the rhythm of things. Like it might have been less than 30 minutes since he hit his last shot.
Sure.
And he's after playing these holes twice in the day, the first five holes. The first five holes are very important because you can actually, someone can start off slow, someone can start off hot, and you can be three under after five there quite easily. So I understood that was possible. And David started like quite sharp, like he hit it lovely in the first few holes especially. But then again, I understood that if we went to the latter stages of this round, just in terms of a physical and an emotional standpoint, I would be the fresher player, even though he had gone to latter stages in a few other matches. I just understood that would definitely help me more than anything.
One of the big pieces of feedback I got from players, and I told them that we're having a chat, they're saying that you're clinical, particularly in that final match.
Mm.
There were some big moments, I guess, like on 10 and on 15 in particular, but from your side, were there any moments where you were like, you hit a shot or you made a putt and you're like, okay, that was a big moment, and you can feel it, because obviously you're right there in the middle of the arena.
I understood, and like my short game was very good, so it's almost like a get out of jail card. Like a lot of the time, especially in match play, it like having a sharp short game and getting up and down from like very difficult spots, or let's say low percentage spots, just gave me the ability to just totally switch the momentum of the match, as well as being good at mid-range and short putting. That I was never out of a hole, like unless I lost a ball or something, which I don't think I did throughout the whole tournament, that I just wasn't going to be out of a hole. And so that's a very difficult thing it's very difficult to play against someone and free up and think that like, oh, I could just get a hole here or else I could win this hole. But I think the way I was playing, that everyone understood that, okay, I need to win a hole. I'm not going to get given any holes. So I know on the 10th, I made a very good up and down. I had a mud ball just right of fairway, and my second shot went the mud, like, well, the ball reacted a lot more than I thought it would. Might have been a little bit of a push, but the ball went way right, and then I had a very difficult lie off a tight lie, but also the ball was sitting down, so it was very much a shot that I could catch heavy, and it was a very demanding tee shot because I had to carry it a long way but also have enough spin to let the ball sit down. And I hit a shot there. I got that up and down, and I understood after losing the ninth that was a huge momentum shift. And then
that chip on 10 wasn't the easiest of chips either, though.
No, it was not an easy chip by any means.
Like, you just kind of
glossed over it. Yeah. No, it wasn't. And I walked up to it, and I remember just thinking, like, this is a really tough shot. And I think when you understand that it's a tough shot and you're okay with it being a tough shot, and this is something that I didn't do in Laytown. A few times I reacted quite poorly to certain lies that I had, and that was from lack of competition. I went up and I understood how difficult the shot was, and it allowed me to just free up. And then I hit a class shot. Like it was not a 2 out of 10 shot, but it was a shot that was very difficult to get close. And I got that up and down, and that allowed me to play 11 very well. I eagled 12 because I was just constantly putting David under pressure, and which is the secret of match play. If you put your opponent under pressure a lot and they understand that it's going to be difficult, it just makes their process a lot harder.
Yeah.
And then when I really felt the moment in terms of like where I was, like I was very focused on my individual stroke play score throughout the whole final, and I made a conscious effort to do that. But when I made par on 15 from after hitting a poor low pull tee shot and then laying up to 100 yards or to 96 yards, I hit a sand wedge there to like 5 feet, and then I hold the putt, and then I remember thinking like, yeah, this is right, you're on the ball here. So then I tried to recenter myself, and on 16 hit a poorish tee shot, but left myself in a very similar spot that I had in the morning. And I understood, I was like, because I remember David missed a left on 16, but on 15 when I made that up and down, I understood what a shift in momentum was. And I could hear, there was, I don't know how many people were out there, but like there was loads of people out there, and I could feel the crowd's disappointment with me hitting that good shot, because they understood that it was a huge momentum shift, and you could hear and you could feel the atmosphere. That's where I was very aware what was going on, and that gave actually me some momentum. And then when I hold that putt, it was just like an absolute dagger. In any situation, whether that's a stroke play event or match play, it's just a dagger. Considering I hit such a bad tee shot and then made such a clinical par on a hard hole, that it just gave me the opportunity to stand on 16 and free up a lot, because I understood that it was dormy at that stage.
Yeah, because then you're three up, three to play after that, making the really, really clutch par.
Yeah.
Is there something about 15 that like you just didn't like as a tee shot, because you're saying kind of in round one that was kind of where it started to unravel?
I think I've said it multiple on different podcasts and everything that I hate the 15th, but I've probably just miscommented on that. But like I hate the tee shot, but I love the hole. Like okay. it's you know, like you can hate the seventh hole in the European but still think it's an amazing hole. Sure. You know, so I have a lot of respect for the tee shot, and that's why I have a very strict game plan and how I approach that hole. I find it difficult in terms of like when the wind's in off the left. I just like to hit 2 iron, and I like to leave myself kind of a mid iron in. I played it poor in the first round because I abandoned my game plan, and I was driving it really well, so I hit driver just down the left center, which what I thought was a good tee shot, and it just bounces into the hill.
Right.
And then I had a terrible lie, and then I did make a couple of mistakes from there, but made a double bogey. So I understood that I could still hit a good shot and get penalized for it. So just 2 iron made sense for me, and I just made a bad execution on the tee on 15. Mentally, I felt very good, but yeah, that it's a great hole, and any hole that makes you somewhat tighten up is just a good design of a hole, I think.
Does the idea of losing come into your mind? Because it seems like you're super disciplined and very, very confident.
Mm.
Compared to other times you've been in finals, the same finals, you've been in the position to win. Does the thought of, I could lose this, come into your mind?
Yeah, I think one of the things that helped me is that I was very comfortable with whatever outcome that happened. And I think that's also down to the balance that I had with everything, playing with freedom and also being focused, that like understanding that you can easily lose these matches. Like it's very difficult to win. There's a reason not a lot of people have won them. So understanding the significance of the moment, the importance of the moment, but also understanding every outcome, understanding that there's no point in building it up so much, because you could go out and get absolutely hammered.
Mm.
Like you can go out and not play your best, and then your opponent plays very, very well, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about that.
You can almost beat yourself.
You can beat yourself. You can get too tight and too afraid to lose rather than willing or wanting to win. So I think understanding the possibility of every outcome is very, very important. And I was very comfortable with that. That's why I understood that, and that's also what kept me very, very focused. And it gave me the ability to just focus on each shot rather than focusing on winning. Even when I got to 3-up with 3 to play, I was very much thinking of just making par on 16, understanding that it's a difficult hole, because I understood that, no, like, these things happen. Like, this is match play. This is a final. Like, wild things happen in finals.
So then you get to the 16th hole. You miss out to the right?
Yeah.
Is that a planned miss? Is that something that with that pin you're like, this is where we're going
to
miss
it? The plan was to kind of hit it right of center.
Sure.
I took a club less than I did in the morning, understanding that I might be juiced up. And I hit a pin high right, just right of the green, just on the fairway. And I had a tight lie, and there was maybe a ball between my ball and the semi-rough.
Okay. So
it was a tricky little lie, but for me it was I just felt so I was chipping nicely, so
especially after what you just hit on 15, confidence must be sky high.
Yeah, and again I understood that throughout the week I was kind of chipping well, and I had loads of green to work with, but all the issue there was the bank straight in front of me. So if I had to hit, it must have been, I don't know how far it was, 70 feet.
Yeah, it looks
so good. So I had about 70 feet, and all the issue was 15 feet in front of me. So I knew if I hit like a sand wedge back in my stance, that was just going to roll out like a putt. So as long as I didn't have a significant missed strike, which I hadn't done in ages. Sure. So it was a very, very comfortable shot for me. So I just had to focus on where I was going to land it and how the ball, and visualize how the ball was going to run out. And actually hit quite an aggressive shot, but I actually maybe struck it too well where it spun up. But left myself like a perfect look. Whereas the morning I had the similar chip and hit it 5 feet past, sure. 4 feet past, and it was actually a rotten little put back. But the one I had to win or to make par was like 4.5-5 feet, just right edge. So it allowed me, because I understood and I approached the hole very well, it allowed me to just free up. And like, I'm constantly talking about freedom, but it allowed me to be very focused. Like I was not underwhelmed, but I was playing it like I was just making a three on the hole. So I just focused on my setup, focused on relaxing my hands, and then hitting the putt firm. And then when I hold it, it was just like it didn't hit me until maybe 10 minutes later, till I actually saw my friends and the guys from Carton House all standing together, and I saw them like a little bit emotional as well. And then I was like, Did this just happen? And then it started to hit me then that I was able to just relax, get out my zone, and then just enjoy it with them.
Because I saw videos of you straight after the win, and like, you're the killer. Like, there wasn't a fist pump, there wasn't kind of, you didn't drop to your knees or celebrate in that way or anything like that. It was reserved, you know. It was the first few minutes were fairly reserved. When it does hit you, and when that emotion does hit you, what is that emotion?
It's kind of surreal, I suppose, because you're so wrapped up. Well, for me, I was wrapped up in being focused and disciplined that it's hard to actually understand what's after happening. It takes a while. It's like a slow process. For me, it was the rest of the evening. Walking back to the clubhouse, people coming up and congratulating me, spending time with my friends. That's when you start to realize, like, oh, this is a big deal. This is something, because I'm so caught up in what I was doing, I didn't think of anything external.
Sure.
I didn't think of anything else that was happening outside of what was happening in my bubble. But then when that all starts to just seep in, and you start to realize, like, some friends that I had and the amount of effort that they put in just to come and see me, and realizing that the amount of people were actually there to see me. That's when you start to realize that, you're starting to just think like, wow, this is just cool. Like, this is just so cool. This, like, winning is just like, this is why we do it. This is why I this is why I try to force practice into my daily routine, or this is why I try to sacrifice a lot of things when I could be doing whatever else. This is why I like to invest my time and my energy and my emotion into golf, because winning as an individual is just something that's so important and so gratifying.
It sounds exhausting, honestly, staying in the process and staying as disciplined as you said you did for that week. Like, how much of a toll does that take on your body? Like, obviously, I'm sure you celebrated, but
yeah,
like, you still drove back from Sligo that night, yeah. Went back to Carton, went back to the club and spent time with your family and friends. I think, like, you're probably up until the early hours.
Yeah, so this is where, like, when I talk about it, it does sound exhausting, but that's me. I need to do that to perform.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm comfortable.
Sure.
So that intense level is actually my comfort zone.
Sure.
And, like, even though it's totally different to the way I am as a personality, like, off the golf course, that's me as a competitor, and that's where I feel very, very comfortable. So it's not exhausting for me. Yeah. It's actually, if anything, it's my happy place, and that's where I feel happy, and that's where I feel content. So I drove back to Carton. I did all the presentation and took all the pictures in Sligo, which was amazing. That golf club is just an incredible place in terms of, like, the effort that they put in and the emotion that's involved there. But the drive back to Carton was just something that I think that was very important, because it gave me a chance to just be by myself for a few hours, because I knew that once I looked at my phone, I knew I was going to be bombarded with messages and trying to reply to everyone, because I think that's when my natural personality, my caring personality, and my extroverted personality is going to kick in. So the drive home was very important, because I got to just embrace it all and kind of just listen to music and analyze just what happened and start to realize what just happened. That's why I think that was a very important thing. I would have actually loved to stay in Sligo and enjoy with the members there and the people in Sligo, but I think it was very important for me to go back to, I went back to Carton House straight away and celebrated there.
What does that win, so it's been a week now, what does this win mean to you, and I guess, like, to Carton as well, but to you personally first, like, this is your first championship?
Yeah, I suppose, like, what it does to me is that it embeds me in Irish amateur history. Like, I'm one of the ones to win, I suppose, the big four in terms of the provinces, and then you have the Irish Am as well, the Irish Close. But one of the big six, I can say I'm a winner of. So it cements me in Irish amateur history. So and no one or nothing can take that away from me. That's why it's important for me as a competitor. That's just something that's very, very valuable and something that I understand and I'm very aware of. That's why it's cool. Like, that's why we do this, because you want for yourself more than anything as a competitor, you want to be able to win and win big things. So that's what it means to me more than anything.
And to Carton House, I mean, that's a club that's supported you for a while, and you spoke about how you wanted to come back and bring the trophy to them as a club. What do you think it means to them?
I think it's huge for Carton, because Paul O'Hanlon was the first amateur major winner in Carton House, but see, I think there was, Paul won the East of Ireland in 2018, I think.
Sure.
And I hope I got that right. But so Paul won it in 2018, but I think it was his first tournament there as a it was his first tournament back as an amateur, and he was after recently joining Carton House. It might have been a year or the first year he was in Carton House. So not a lot of people knew Paul. Mm. Paul didn't have the same connection with the golf club. Even though that was an unbelievable win, I remember being there for that, and that was incredible. I celebrated that with Paul. But this was huge for Carton House, because it was the first one of their, like, Fred Daly players or junior players. Like, sure. I've been a member there since I was 15. I've come through the ranks at under 15s level, at boys level. Got my international cap my first international cap as a Carton House member. They've supported me emotionally, financially. The members have been unbelievably supportive of juniors and amateur golfers in Carton House. And just as a club, they've been very supportive of all of our elite amateur players, everyone that plays in championships. So I understood that, and I was very well aware of like everything that they've done for us. And then seeing how many people came up from Carton House to support me as well. Like the biggest thing I think was when myself and Paul played, seeing how many people were there for that, because that's a difficult thing when like people come up to watch that, but they don't know who they're supporting.
Sure.
Like that's a very difficult thing to do. So seeing the support that we both got, like they were saying good shots very equally for me and Paul when we played. But that's why I understood going back to Carton was very, very significant. And then I remember walking into the clubhouse, walking into the bar and restaurant. It must have been 10 o'clock at night. I got back, and then seeing the amount of people there was quite overwhelming for me, because I had all the Senior Cup guys, all the most of the Fred Daly guys that were there, or recent Fred Daly guys, and then a lot of members that have supported me over the years were there. So I don't have no idea how many people were there. It must have been probably 50 or 60 people were in the clubhouse. But to do that on a Tuesday night at 10 o'clock at night, people from coming all over the place to celebrate with me, and for no real reason, like they don't have an exact involvement in it.
Sure.
That's what shows how cool a victory of like one of the big majors is in the West of Ireland. So it showed me how big Irish Amateur Golf is. It showed me how significant the win was, not only for me, but for the club as well. So that was one of the coolest things ever. And I didn't really celebrate. Like I had two drinks and then everything started to hit me and I was exhausted then. So I ended up just having an early night, but just even for whatever the hour, a couple hours I was there, everyone was just genuinely so happy for me. And especially like my teammates who played in the tournament as well. Like that's not an easy thing to do if they competed and then,
for sure,
yeah. You know, like, so that shows the character and the trust and also the relationship we all have together. So we support each other no matter what. And that's a very valuable thing to have.
Your parents are both golfers.
My dad is. My mom.
You're not at mom isn't, no.
No. My mom is more of a black belt in Shotokan karate. So her and my brother are more on that side of things. Whereas my dad is my dad's still a very good golfer. Yeah.
What does the win mean for them? I'm sure they were incredibly proud.
Oh, it means everything, because of like every player that I think plays amateur golf in Ireland understands that there's someone, if not their parents, but there's someone giving them some sort of support when you're growing up. Because like financially, it's not easy.
No.
Even playing like boys golf, it's not easy. It's a lot of expense. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of energy. So my dad brought me around to tournaments since I was a kid, and he got me into golf. And then for most of my life, I've wanted to win these things because of him, give something back to him and make him proud and happy. And then it's only recently that I started to, well, in the last few years, I started to develop a deep, deep appreciation more for golf and for Irish amateur golf. So I've wanted, my focus has kind of shifted, and that has probably helped with my mindset as well. But yeah, it means everything to them. I celebrated with them at home in Newbridge in Kildare. I went up to the Curragh Golf Club where I started playing golf last Friday, and they did something unbelievable there as well to celebrate, which totally surprised me because I haven't been a member there in 13 years. And they were so supportive as well. And yeah. that just shows, again, how big it is and how much people appreciate these things.
How addictive is that feeling of winning? Like you've walked into Carton House, walked into the clubhouse at Ross's and at the Curra as well. Like everyone there cheering you on and applauding you and your achievements. That must be a feeling you're like, oof, I want this again.
Definitely. That's the one thing that made me really realize through all of this is just like how motivating it is. And I spoke with a few people, like it does give you a sense of how important winning is and how valuable winning is. And I think it's important to celebrate with people so you actually realize that as well. Like it's very easy to not celebrate and just get back into your normal routine and get back into practicing and playing. But I think understanding the magnitude of it for not only myself, but for other people, let's say for Carton House, for members of the Curra Golf Club as well, and just for my friends and for my parents, like for all of them, it's important to realize how big a deal it is. So then that motivates you to kick on. And because then what that makes me want to do, it makes me want to put in the same amount of effort, if not more, to try win another one and try bottle up what I have to give myself a chance to win more.
So did you get the chance to celebrate and enjoy it? And I guess, I imagine a few drinks have been taken now out of the trophy. Have you cleaned it?
Yeah, I don't know how much I can say if there's people from Sligo Golf Club that hold the trophy usually too. So I don't know, I'm not going to say much, but yeah, I did. I definitely celebrated. And I think I didn't actually plan any celebrations. It just kind of happened. Spending with different groups of friends. I'm lucky to have a lot of different friends. I'm lucky to, in the world that we live in now, where Irish amateur golf is very covered from a social media standpoint.
Yeah.
Like in the last week, I'm sick of seeing myself on social media, which is a great thing, you know, because of the amount of videos that I've been able to share. Whereas in the past, a lot of people wouldn't have been able to do that. So because of that, a lot of my friends were aware of the magnitude of it, because nowadays it's like, if you see something that's very popular on social media, you realize that it's popular.
It's a big thing,
like, who's the most famous person in the world? Probably who has the most followers on Instagram.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So it made my friends and my relatives and stuff just realize how big a deal it was through the interactions that they saw on social media. So that naturally just caused them to celebrate a lot more with me, which was great. That was exhausting more than anything, but it's great. Yeah, and I think it's very important.
So what's next? I guess the big question is, you've done it now. You've got the win. You said the goals don't change. You've got lofty goals.
Mm.
What's the next kind of tournament or trophy that's on your mind?
Yeah, I suppose like from a result standpoint, the focus is just trying to win. And that's been like a focus shift on mine for the last couple of years, especially last year. Even though I didn't play well last year, my focus definitely changed, and I think what I've learned this year is just where I'm competitively optimal, I suppose, this year.
Sure.
And that's the biggest thing I've realized. But now it's just still focusing on winning tournaments. And I have goals that I don't want to say too much about, but the next goal is to just get back to practicing and set up a plan, like how I approach my next few tournaments. I have a great balance with work and like social life and playing golf now. So that's something that I just need to set up a plan for over the next few weeks. So my next tournament is probably Munster Stroke Play and then the Irish Am, which is in Sligo. So I treat those like they're like nothing has ever happened. Take the confidence that I've gained from the West and then just move on and try kick on from that.
You must be relishing the chance to go back to Sligo for the Irish Am.
Yeah,
that's obviously just a tournament that moves around. Like, conference must be pretty good now you're going back to Sligo, and I imagine conditions will be similar enough.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the course will be like. It might be a bit firmer depending obviously on the weather that we get, but if it's firmer, the course can play totally different, because it was quite soft when we played. So sure. It probably made chipping a lot more important and not as much emphasis on iron play, whereas I think when the course gets firmer, you have to be a much better iron player, and maybe your decision making off the tee changes. So it depends how the course changes in terms of like just the condition, but it'll be very difficult to get in better condition than it was for the West, and if they do, that'll be amazing. But I obviously take a lot of confidence, because I have proof that I've done it around that golf course, but for 72 whole strokes, it's a little bit of a different story.
Sure.
So I need to, again, treat it like nothing really happened, and then focus on my own process, and then set up a plan how I can play well in Ross's in what are we, a month away? Just mm-hmm. over a month. So and then I'm just excited for it.
Do you remember when we were halfway through with round two? When we were halfway through round two at Laytown, Betty Sound.
Yeah,
and I was like, "Oh, what are you doing on the 10th of April?"
I remember.
I was like, "We're having," and this is actually a great point. Like, I was saying to Keith, saying to you, like, "Do you want to come on? We're looking at having whoever wins the West,
yeah,
and then three other people." And You were so deliberate and saying, well, hopefully I'll be there in two.
Yeah,
two
I said, hopefully I'll be there with the trophy.
Yeah.
And boom, here we are.
Like, look, there you are.
It's so cool,
it's
isn't
so,
it?
It's so cool. I was only thinking of that last night. I was like, obviously it was just like, for me, what sounded like a throwaway comment, but
there was intent behind it.
Getting to know you just from this chat and then just spend the day with you, there doesn't seem to be anything throwaway with what you do. You were very deliberate with what you were saying there. We're like, no, I'm obviously you're there. You're going there to win.
Yeah.
But you from then, I understood, you had the ambition right there. Like, that was really, really impressive.
Yeah. That was cool. I remember that very specifically. So, and there was something cool actually about when I stayed in a house with Paul O'Hanlon, Aidan Dooley and Dara Flynn. We're all, the first night we got there, it was great, like, because it was the first time we've probably seen each other in a while. So we just sat in the kitchen of the house we were staying in, and we had a competition, like, see who could name the past winners of the West. And Aidan Dooley, being the absolute golf nerd that he is, he was able to name every winner from 2023 until 1990.
Whoa.
Yeah, very impressive. Maybe give or take one. Yeah, no, he was able to name every winner until 1990, which is unbelievably impressive. And I remember as he was doing it, him and Paul O'Hanlon were going back and forth, because I think Paul might have had it on his phone and Aidan Dooley was naming the winners. I remember just thinking, like, holy fuck, that would be so cool. That'd be so cool to be a winner of the West. Yeah. And I remember that's a very specific thought that I had as well. And those things kind of, I've got quite a good recall for little moments like that, I think. So that was very cool as well.
Are you going to get your name engraved as quickly as possible? Because I know some people like to do it.
I don't know. Do I do it or the club does it?
If it's, because I remember when I played hockey and we won a few tournaments, and I won a specific tournament myself, or got an award myself. Mm. I was like, I want to put my name on it straight away.
Yeah,
because I want to see my name on it.
Yeah, I think, like, that's a very important thing. I'm actually, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to call them today, because I would like to do that. I would like to see it, because a few people are like, where's your name?
For sure.
Yeah.
And that's exactly it, because you don't want to give it back next year and then go, right, my name's on it now.
Yeah.
Like, you want to spend 12 months of looking at your name on that trophy.
Because I think I'm giving it back in less than 2 weeks. So, because I'm going to go to a champions dinner that's there. Yeah. So I would like to do that.
Do you keep it after that? Like, do you get
Honestly, I don't, like, it's fucking stressful having it. I'm afraid of breaking it. Yeah, because I'm bringing it everywhere with me.
Yeah,
you know,
it's already got a few knocks.
Yeah, like, I want to make the most of seeing it. Yeah. And so I'm holding it every day. Like, between from yesterday and since last Tuesday night, I've been just taking pictures with everyone and showing people it, and I'm afraid giving it to people and letting them look at it. So next week or from Thursday or Friday, I'm going to give it back to my parents and let them enjoy it. Because I know my dad will, like, he will geek out over that and give him a bit of time by himself to enjoy it. But it is a cool thing to just keep looking back on. I would probably like it for 12 months, but the stress of having it is unreal. For me, the biggest thing is just being able to say, like, I'm the fucking champ, you know, for 12 months.
Yeah.
That's a cool thing to be able to say. And play the song, is it by O Fresh? Champ is here. Play that repeatedly. So that's the thing that sticks with me. But the trophy's cool for a while, but it is kind of stressful having that around with you.
I can imagine. Do you get any kind of replica or, like, miniature of the trophy?
No idea. I don't. I doubt it. I doubt it. I wouldn't get a miniature. If I was gonna get, I'm getting that exact size, if not bigger, because it's a big trophy, isn't it? Like, it's a proper trophy.
That's very good.
Yeah, it's cool. It's very cool.
Nice. Very nice. Listen, Keith, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Great to have the chat. Good luck this season. It doesn't sound like it's gonna be the last win this year.
Yeah, hopefully not. Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.